This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Good night. Hello, everybody. We're so happy to have you tuning in. You know, a couple months ago, we did a podcast with Dr. Newfield from ODs on finance, and we were talking about investment strategies. And we were so excited with all the comments we got on that show. And we noticed a lot of the comments were asking about investing in crypto. So circling back a couple months later, I was like, well, why don't we just do a crypto episode? Because I think a lot of people have questions. And we have expert guests on the show who are going to be able to talk about it in more detail than just an overarching thing, like if Daryl and I were trying to have this conversation. So we've got the ODs on finance team, and then my husband is making his first ever show appearance to speak for how we're doing things. Yeah. I will butcher it if I talk about it myself.
Should be great.
Well, Jen, I'm like you. I have a little bit of crypto, but I don't know what the hell is going on. I do the traditional, you know, stocks, as we touched on previously, ETFs and, you know, things of that nature. So I'm super excited that we have a team of experts here to really help guide and really show me the way. Please show me the way. Before we get started, let's just do an introduction. Let's first start off with Dr. Lyerly, this a handsome young man sitting beside you. If you don't mind, just Mark, giving us your background and all that other jazz, man. So everyone can know who's sitting beside Dr. Jennifer Lyerly. You know, you got a lot of jealous people out there. Everybody wants to be beside Dr. Lyerly.
Okay.
Yeah. You want me to intro?
Yeah, you got to tell about yourself.
Sure. Good evening, everybody. Mark Chen. So yes, I'm the lucky person who's married to the wonderful Dr. Lyerly. We've been married for almost 8 years now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just been, you know, obviously I've heard a lot of the podcasts that and conversations you guys have had, and it's definitely a privilege to be part of the conversation. Just as some background, so you know, I got into crypto fairly recently. I'm sure we'll get into that more later, but I've been doing more investments, or I guess investing our portfolio for the last 8.5 years or close to 8 years now. So again, yeah, just happy to be part of it. And thanks for having me on.
And he's not an optometrist, but he is in biotechnology. So yeah. We have fun conversations.
Awesome.
We do. We don't talk about optometry. So make sure he gets enough of that here.
Well, Dr. Newfield, give us an update on ODs on finance and what's been going on in your life.
Yeah, definitely. So just a quick recap, ODs on finance, biggest personal and professional finance optometry focused website out there right now. We've been doing a lot of interesting things, actually. We just recently put out a poll today. We are trying to create a credit card for optometry owners. We're working with a fintech company on that. So if you're wondering why you're getting questions about a poll, that's the reason for it. It's only a minute, so if you can fill it out, that'd be awesome. Quick plug there. But other than that, yeah, we're just keeping the content going in terms of investing, getting out of debt, all that good stuff. So that's what we're all about. And yeah, community continues to grow, and we continue to have great conversations. And I think we're gonna have a great one tonight as well.
Well, you know, we had mentioned on our last show, these questions were coming up, but then what really spurred me to email you to say, hey, let's do a podcast about this is Dr. Nedoku had written this excellent article that was on ODs on finance about cryptocurrency. I was like, oh my gosh, it would be so great for us to cover this topic since you guys are digging into it. So how did you get involved with crypto, John?
Well, I got involved in 2013. By the way, I'm John Adelku. I practice in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm the vice president of the Connecticut Association here. So I got into crypto with online gambling, if I'm being honest, to play poker online. So that's, you know, a case you study, right? It has some value there. But then, you know, I kind of wanted to learn more about what, you know, what I was using and what other, you know, versions of Bitcoin, you know, are there. And one thing led to another. And, you know, from 2013 to now, I went real deep down the rabbit hole.
So you definitely have the longest history investing in this. So you're our featured
investing
guest on this show. You've been through a lot to get to this point.
Yeah.
Why don't we dig
into the ups and the downs.
And the downs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pitch a lot of these questions to you, and then we can, as a group, kind of fill in. But let's start on the basics, because I think a lot of people listening are like, okay, I don't even know what this is. So what is cryptocurrency? What makes it different than actual money?
Sure. So it's a digital asset that first of all, you can't make more of it, right? So, well, for the most part, you can't make more of it. There's a finite amount of it. It's on an open ledger, so everybody can see the transactions that are happening. And it's decentralized, so no one person or group or company controls what's coming in and out. So people like that because, you can see exactly what's happening. You don't have to worry about like Chase freezing your money because, something fraudulent happened, or maybe the IRS flagged you for something that you might be completely innocent of, whatever the case may be. Ultimately, your assets are in your control. Nobody else controls that. And the transactions are secured by few different ways, but the common term is like blockchain. If you say blockchain anything, everybody's stock goes up when you just say the word blockchain. But blockchain is just a group of transactions that happen in the block, and there's other data in there, and they're all linked by cryptography, among other ways, to each other, and you can kind of follow the flow of transactions, and everybody has access to that. Everybody can see it, so it's an open network that everybody can appreciate, if that makes sense.
let's talk through some of the most popular coins on a high level, because it's more than just Bitcoin.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, so Bitcoin is the most popular, and Bitcoin was the godfather, the Elon Musk of crypto. But so that started, I want to say, in 2009, if I remember my crypto history correctly. And we don't know who created Bitcoin. That's kind of the interesting, allure to it. It's by somebody named Satoshi Nakamoto, and nobody ever stepped up to claim who that is. It might be a person, it might be a group, it could be anybody. That's the longest running crypto. And that's important for crypto because that shows that your algorithm is secure. It shows that people can't take advantage of your network and compromise it. And that's one of the most valuable things there is in crypto, is longevity and is it hackable? Is it attackable? And Bitcoin, through time and time, has shown that you can't attack it, you can't hack it, you can't take advantage of it. So that's why it's very popular. But there's other ones. Another popular one is Ethereum. That one has a lot more use cases, and in my opinion, I think that's going to surpass Bitcoin in a few years, but we can get into why that is. And there's a million others. There's like over 1,000 nowadays, and they all claim to be the next best thing, but only a few of them can be.
I know you had mentioned in the article that you wrote, it feels kind of like with cryptocurrency, it's almost like the dot-com bubble, where there's so many companies that are entering the marketplace. There's so many different coins.
Yeah.
And all of them probably aren't going to make it out on the other side. So knowing which ones are the best ones to stake your investment in makes sense. When people are kind of judging coins, how do you feel like they should place value on the ones that are a better investment?
Well, so every coin has like a white paper that the developers, put together to tell you, how it works, like from a very technical standpoint, what its functions are, what the purpose of the coin is. So you have to just look at that. You have to, see, do you think that it's legitimate in terms of its use case? Do you think that the way it works, like the actual functionality of the coin, because they don't all work like Bitcoin with the proof of work cryptography. They all have kind of variations of how they prove the transactions occurred. So you just have to look at all that and then get involved in the community. So like Reddit is somewhere that is awesome if you want to learn information about any crypto. Every crypto has its own community and everybody's posting all the time, and you can ask questions if you don't understand technical things. I'm sorry, my earphone keeps coming out. So I would learn about it, but you know, I would also be, you know, cautious. It is volatile. It is something that's brand new. I mean, blockchain, the cat's out of the bag. Blockchain isn't going away. It's not something that, you know, is we're going to forget about in a few years. Blockchain is here to stay, just like the internet was here to stay during, you know, the dot-com bubble, and some of these companies were here to stay. But, you know, definitely many of the coins that are popular right now, Dogecoin, are going to go to zero. And, you know, only the strongest networks are going to survive.
Yeah, one thing I'll mention is from a, I guess, a layman's perspective, and John, I certainly haven't been in it as long as you have, but I mean, just researching things recently, I do feel like there's a lot of resources to learn. I mean, you mentioned the white papers. One thing I would say that has been helpful for me is if I'm interested in a particular token or coin, a lot of them have their own, or some of them have their own websites, like Chainlink, for example, is one. You can go there. They have there's a CEO of Chainlink, so some of the coins are centralized and sort of run by a group. Yes. And they actually will go into more layman's terms on their website to explain, you know, what's their value contribution to the crypto space. So, I mean, it's because I've found that some of the white papers, especially for someone like me, can be pretty technical. And if you don't have like a computer science background, you know, you may not understand it as well. And again, just speaking from my personal experience.
I agree. I think that's a great place to start. Obviously, you know, websites that are dedicated to a coin are going to be biased, right? So they're going to only tell you the good things. So that's a great place to start to get like a feel for what it does. But you know, if you're really going to put decent cash in there, you should probably also learn what the shortfalls are. But yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Another great one is also Clubhouse. They have a lot of different rooms where they discuss cryptocurrency and give great overviews and break it down from top to bottom as well. I still don't know much about it, but you know, I'll, you know, jump in a room and just hear and take little tidbits here and there. But they have tons of rooms dedicated to Bitcoin, and people come out by the hundreds just to listen to various people speak, because there's a lot of KOLs, I guess, and experts when it comes to this topic. And a lot of times you can, the cool thing about Clubhouse is you can go to their profile and then go to their Instagram page from there, or if they have a website, and they can give you more information and break it down where you can understand it better than probably a white paper as well. So I'd recommend also checking out Clubhouse, because they have great speakers and content on there as well.
I'm going to ask the old person question that honestly many people our age are probably asking themselves on this podcast too, but if you're talking to someone over 50, this question always comes up. Why does it have value? It's not real. So what do you say to that?
Well, why does a dollar have value? I mean, a dollar is tangible, but ultimately it's a piece of paper. It used to be backed by gold, right? It's no longer backed by gold. Now it's just backed by good faith that you believe in the US government, right? But ultimately, you know, that's just an idea. There's nothing physical to it. You know, gold, you know, has, you know, some value innately just because it's pretty and it's a conductor and it has other chemical properties that are valuable. You know, same is true for diamonds, but you know, cash, you know, or dollars don't have that. So why is it valuable? Well, you know, it's again, it's finite, which gives something value when there's not an unlimited amount of it, just by the nature of something being finite. If people want something that's finite, it's going to increase the value of that. Why do people want it? Well, again, it's a different way to exchange money that doesn't require you to go to a bank. It doesn't require a third party. And nobody can, well, I shouldn't say nobody can stop you, but it's harder to limit what you can do with your money. If Chase wants to not allow you to buy something because it doesn't agree with it morally or whatever the case may be, they're going to stop you, and it's your money, but they're going to say, well, it's on our network. So we control what happens on our network. You know, and that's where cryptocurrency comes in, where you have that money, you can spend it across the country instantly with little fees. You can transfer like $100 million for, you know, dollars, almost instantly. And that has value. All those things have value. And that's why cryptocurrency is valuable.
Yeah, and I think going off of what John was saying about how the dollar is basically good faith at this point, we've seen the economic landscape the past year or so with massive inflation coming around. That's getting people more and more afraid, you know, how is my dollar going to be worth anything in the future? We've seen it. It's incredible. So yeah, cryptocurrency provides kind of an outlet, kind of a hedge against that. What's going to happen in the future, I don't think anyone really knows, but yeah, just another one of those things.
Yeah, it's definitely it's hard to say at this point whether it's an uncorrelated asset, right? Whether it actually tracks the market or whether it doesn't. But I think John mentioned this a little bit, but you know, people do assign value to it by saying it's potentially a store of value like gold, right? In that it's not subject to the same like inflationary pressure as fiat, like dollars, right? Like if the Federal Reserve of the US is printing a lot of money recently, obviously over the last 18 months, you know, you worry about inflation, like your dollar may not be worth as much as it was 18 months ago. So you could look at Bitcoin as, you know, an example of, you know, hey, it's digital gold. It's going to hold its store of value better than the US dollar is. So that's a reason for me to invest in it. And one thing I'll mention quickly also is if you're trying to value Bitcoin, you say like the market cap of Bitcoin, I think it hit 1 trillion at some point earlier this year. And now is, I think, hovering around like 600 billion. But if you wanted to say, you know, if I'm trying to find a price target for it, you might say, what's the overall market cap of gold, which I think is probably around 10 trillion or so. So, I mean, if you think that Bitcoin is going to supplant gold as, you know, sort of a reserve currency or sort of, you know, the thing that's dollars are backed against or currencies backed against, then you could, in theory, say that's what the value of Bitcoin would eventually get to.
And it's morphed also. So it started as a store of value and a way to transact currency for goods, but it's evolved now. Now there's things like smart contracts, and that's why I like Ethereum a whole lot, because they kind of pioneered smart contracts and are leading the way. So with smart contracts, there's actually use. A dollar can only buy you things. A dollar, I mean, you can make a paper airplane out of it, but other than that, there's no actual use to the dollar. Ethereum has a use with smart contracts. Smart contracts are essentially computer programs. They're like if-then statements, right? So you say, if X happens, then give me Y. So you can now use Ethereum to program events, and you can use it for decentralized finance, which is like lending and borrowing using your crypto. So you can say, I'll lend you this, and if this happens, you give me back at that. And you can, you know, you can write little programs, and you can sell unique items on the Ethereum blockchain. So like one thing that was popular a while back ago was crypto kitties, which is ridiculous, but they're like sort of like those beanie bag babies, right? They were all unique and people wanted them, so they would trade for more rare ones, but they're and those were unique and backed on the blockchain through smart contracts. So again, it's evolving to a little bit more than an asset. It actually does something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one example of that utility could be, I think, John, you mentioned that you got into this from online gambling. So, I mean, like an example there could be, you know, if nowadays, if we were playing poker and we agreed to some, you know, form of exchange via dollars, right? We said like, oh, we're going to bet X amount of dollars. You'd have to probably rely on me to either pay up, or we'd have to work through some like trusted third party, right? Like a gambling website to sort of handle the transaction. And they probably take a percentage of it, right? Versus in the future, if you have a smart contract, I mean, that's essentially something that we set up ahead of time. And then, you know, once we actually go through and play our game, whatever the outcome is, that smart contract sort of can take that outcome in, right? And then ensure the payout happens. And it's basically
that's not the future, though. That's already happening. There's already gambling websites that use smart contracts to pay out people. So again, it's cutting out a middleman. It's opening it up. Everybody can see that smart contract on the network. You know, so there's less shady things going on. It's more open. And again, there's no middle party taking a cut.
Well, let's dive a little bit into, you know, there's a lot of people out here that are looking at cryptocurrency like, what the hell is this? Where do I start? Did I miss the opportunity?
It's too late.
Is it too late? I mean, let's really dive into just like kind of walk me through the process, right? You know, we kind of touched on the different ways of learning about cryptocurrency, but what platforms do I go to invest in cryptocurrency? You know, let's start there. Where do I invest? I mean, I know I have Robinhood and then I have Coinbase, and I saw that, you know, they all have different cryptocurrencies on those different platforms. And then I also hear about this wallet, and I hear that I shouldn't be on these platforms because I'm not going to be able to get my money. So I hear all types of crazy mess out there. So let's just dive into that, because I know that's a big piece that people are asking about and wanting to learn more about. So feel free to take the floor anyway, because I want to learn. I have my pen and pad. I'm ready to go. Let's make it happen.
So the biggest place, or the most popular place, is Coinbase, and they just, you know, went public a few weeks ago, and people, you know, made a lot of money on that. So that's the biggest place in America to get money. I think the biggest place overall is Binance, which you can access in some states. I can't here in Connecticut. But yeah, let's just stick to American companies. Coinbase is the easiest. They have slightly higher fees. They have a professional version of Coinbase that is more, you know, kind of like technical, and the fees are a little bit lower. There's Gemini is another popular one. There's Abra, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. There's a few. So you mentioned Robinhood. There's a few like Robinhood. I think, what's the other one? PayPal or, anyway. Oh, no, Venmo. Recently got into it. But the problem with Venmo and Robin, I'm pretty sure Venmo is like this. I know Robinhood is like this. They don't let you take your coin off their exchange, which is a problem. It's a big problem. The saying is, if you don't own your keys, you don't own your coins, right? So if you don't own the private key, you don't actually own the coin. Robinhood is essentially giving you an IOU for that coin and saying, okay, on our servers, you own that coin. You can sell it whenever you want, but it's ours, and you can just trade it whenever you want, but you can't take it yourself. And that's a bad thing, because what if Robinhood has liquidity issues, right? What if Robinhood gets hacked? You know, it's not a good place to store your coin. And I can talk about, you know, storing your coin if you want a little bit later, but just wherever you get your coin, it doesn't matter a whole lot. Look at fees. Look at, do you own the private keys, and make sure, of course, it's a legitimate company. And, you know, some of the big players like Robinhood and Gemini are great places to get it.
So you're talking about keys. What are you talking about? I got keys to my car. You want to see those? I mean, like, how does this work? I mean, like, let's dive a little deeper and really deconstruct.
Sure. Sure. So every crypto asset has a private key and a public key. So a public key is an address. Like, you can send your money to this address and it belongs to me, and that's public to everybody. So you can share that with people, because it's like saying, you know, send it to my like home address. A private key is like having the key to your door. If you want to get your money into your house at your public address, but you don't want to give people your private keys to go into your house. The private key is your way to prove that you own that public address. So to have access to those coins, you have to have the private key, and you can give people the public key to transact. So that's a difference between a public key and a private key. So Robinhood will give you a public key, so you can put money from other exchanges into Robinhood's, and you can buy it from them, and it'll put it into your wallet, which has a public key, but then they own the private key. They're saying, again, this is ours. We're kind of letting you trade it, but ultimately we own it. You can't put it anywhere. It's not yours. So that's what a private key and a public key is.
That makes kind of like your personal passcode to when you want to take that money out of the ATM.
Essentially, yeah. It's your way to prove that you have the account. If you lose your private key, you know, so you've heard of all these people that, you know, have had like Bitcoin on old computers, and they, yeah, and they, you know, there,
Newfield, right? Didn't you have something
that happened to me?
I remember last time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I had some on a ledger, on a USB ledger, and trying to look for it. Okay.
Yeah. Oh wow. So I mean, yeah, you can physically lose it, but you can also have that USB that you were talking about. But if you don't have the password or the private key to get into that, even if you have access to that computer or that USB drive, you don't have access to the funds. You don't have access to the asset. But there's
the safest way then, because I mean, anything can happen, right? I mean, what's the safest way of going about, holding your cryptocurrency? If, you know, Robinhood is, you know, having a public key, but you can't really take your money out if all these issues are taking place. I mean, what do you suggest for us to take the safest route and make sure that we can pull our money out whenever we want to?
Yeah. So, well, that's a good question. You said, what's the safest route? But then you mentioned pull our money out whenever we want to, because those are two different issues. So what's the safest route? Well, the safest route is probably a hard wallet or a paper wallet. So a hard wallet is like, you know, like you mentioned, like a USB drive that's specific for cryptocurrency, and you can store your coin on there, and then you can literally put that in a safe. And obviously it's very secure. It's not networked, so nobody can just sit in their mom's basement and hack into your safe, right? They have to physically break in. It's a little bit harder. So it's safer that way. The downside is, you know, you mentioned, you know, you want to be able to trade it easily. Well, obviously you can't trade it easily. You have to go into your safe. You have to plug it into your computer. You have to put in your password. You have to move it to the exchange, and then you have to trade it. So there's more steps to it, but it's more secure. So you have to kind of, there's a little bit of a trade-off. There's something called a paper wallet, where you're literally taking a piece of paper and you're writing either your private key or your seed. A seed is a way to unlock your private key. It's like your backup password. So with those two things, you can write it on a piece of paper, and you can literally have a paper with $100 million on it if you wanted, and you can just put it in the safe. And that's obviously secure. Is it safe? Well, I don't know. If the safe isn't fireproof, you might have a problem. Or if there's mold in the safe, you might have a problem. So there's problems with that, obviously, but nobody's hacking a piece of paper. A nice in-between is digital wallets. So that is a wallet that is on your computer or a wallet that's on your phone. The upside of that is you own your phone, you own your computer, so you own your coin, and it's, you know, a third party doesn't have access to it when it's on your device. And it's also very quick to exchange. So it's already on my phone. If the market is going crazy and I feel like I want to get out, I can quickly transfer it to Coinbase and pull my money out. The downside is, and also people aren't trying to hack your computer as much, probably. I mean, people are, but everybody's trying to hack all the crypto exchanges, right? Because that's like, you know, cracking into a bank safe, right? If you can hack into one of those, you're going to be very wealthy. So, you know, they're being attacked every single day, probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of times a day. You're not. But obviously, if you don't secure it correctly, right, you have to have passwords. You have to make sure you know those passwords. You have to make sure they're good passwords. Also you have to have put safeguards in place, because if you lose that device, if like people lose their phones all the time, right? If you lose your device, that asset is unique to your phone. It's not just like in the cloud, although things like that sort of exist, but generally they're stored on device, because if it's on the cloud, then you're making it susceptible to people. But so it's generally on device. So you want to make sure that that's set up correctly so that you can get it back. So you don't, you know, end up in one of those situations. And then of course you can leave it on exchange. That's the easiest way, but again, not very secure. People can hack into the exchange itself, which is difficult. You know, it has happened historically, you know, since I've been in the game and before me, exchanges have gotten hacked and people have stolen Bitcoin and other assets. But what's more likely to happen is you get phished, right? So somebody pretends to be Coinbase, or whoever, and they get access to your account. That's more likely to happen. Although there's a lot of safeguards they try to put in place, but nothing is unhackable. So yeah, so those are, you know, kind of all the pros and cons. Personally, I like the digital wallet for most of my stuff, and I'll put some things in hard wallets. I don't really do paper. It's a lot of time. I don't got time for that. So yeah, I do a mixture of a hard wallet and a digital wallet. And I keep some on the exchanges too.
So these exchanges, you know, when you have your money at the bank, there's federal insurance, basically. So if someone were to go steal your bank account, like, you've got insurance to up to $250,000 or whatever, like you're covered. These exchanges aren't under U.S. government control. That's the whole point of them. So is there any safeguards if there is a hacking or a phishing incident?
Last time I checked, the answer was no. I wouldn't be surprised if companies got big enough and they insured it to, you know, a certain amount. They're not going to insure, you know, millions of dollars, but maybe hundreds of thousands. I could see a company like Coinbase doing. As far as I know, the answer is no. Maybe they've started doing that. Again, I can see a future where that is definitely possible.
Yeah, I do think, I think Gemini is an example of an exchange that has, they carry insurance. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it's, I don't think it's, to your point, Gem, it's not federally insured necessarily, right. But
so some sort of safeguarding. I mean, so we were interested in investing in Bitcoin many years ago, but actually getting coin was a huge barrier to entry. So like setting up the Gemini account, but talk a little bit about your experience on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was more difficult years ago than it is now. I mean, so, you know, that's, I'd heard about obviously Bitcoin for like several years, but then, you know, I have a former boss actually and friend who, you know, was just, he kept nagging me to invest in it. He's like, you know, you really should. And was like talking about the bull case, et cetera, for doing that, and recommended Gemini. So, you know, I definitely created an account on there. That was pretty straightforward. But I remember just at the time, you know, humorously enough, it came down to the current financial system being a barrier, because at the time, you know, my bank was limiting the amount of money I could transfer into Gemini on a daily basis, right? I mean, it was limiting to, I think, basically $500 a day, unless you wanted to do a wire transfer, which is a little bit painful. So I think now they've increased that amount considerably. But yeah, at the time it was, you know, it was one of many barriers. I mean, to a lot of the stuff that, you know, you just spoke about, John, like talking about, you know, hot and cold storage, digital wallets, you know, hard wallets. I mean, all of that seemed like just too much of a barrier for entry, especially years ago. I think definitely with the proliferation of the exchanges and especially Robinhood, although that comes with its own risks, it's much more accessible now than it's ever been, which I think is, you know, adoption, that helps the adoption curve and helps drive the adoption of the technology and, you know, obviously the increase in price that we've seen recently.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have another question. I'm full of questions. you know, this is for you, Dr. Newfield, Aaron. Mm-hmm. You know, last time you were on the podcast, we touched on just really having a pretty well-rounded portfolio, but I don't know if we really touched on cryptocurrency. I'm curious to know, with cryptocurrency, and John, I'd love to get your opinion, and Mark as well. Where do you see cryptocurrency? What percentage of your portfolio should this be a part of? I mean, this is like, how much, what percentage should be cryptocurrency in my overall portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you my opinion. I mean, I don't want to give any advice per se on this, because I know it'll be pretty controversial, whatever I say. But for me, I just think it, at this point, there's so much volatility still. And we just, yeah, we're beginning to see reasons for it in our economy, but we haven't seen anything that's, you know, set in stone. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people still don't take crypto, is it keeps going up and down. It's like, how much Ethereum do I charge for an eye exam? I mean, it's going to change every day. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. So for me personally, I keep it in kind of the fun part of the portfolio, which is 5%. And I've bought it since 2015, but just in very small increments. And it's all been Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ripple or XRP. Those are the ones that I've kind of looked at, just the ones that have a little bit more mainstream appeal. I see all these smaller ones popping up, a lot of pump and dumps. I think SafeMoon has been the big one recently that's been kind of the pump. But I see just a small portion of the portfolio and continue to increase it as this becomes more and more of a reality. I mean, it's here to stay. I agree with John and everyone else that, you know, says it's here to stay, but the volatility is just so drastic. And yeah, Bitcoin was what, 60,000 a month ago? Now it's 30,000. So it's,
yeah,
or somewhere around there. So yeah, it's hard to see that portfolio bump around that much when you know, like an index fund, you just get that solid small increase and small decrease.
I can take it easy. I'm long term, baby.
But it's all about, yeah, and it's all about risk, what you can handle in terms of risk. You know, bigger risk, bigger rewards. We saw that with Doge and that massive jump, and who knows why the heck that even happened besides Elon pumping it. But yeah, that's my opinion on it. So
Nice.
Yeah, and I agree with Aaron. I think, you know, your risk tolerance is a factor in how much. Obviously, I started this by telling you that I got into it gambling online. So obviously, I have a higher risk tolerance than I think most people. You know, that being said, I think, yeah, it's unreasonable to put your life savings in crypto. You know, it's unreasonable to devote a significant amount of your portfolio because there is a lot of volatility, although I believe in it and I believe in, you know, specific ones. Certainly, you know, the altcoins, basically anything that's not Bitcoin or Ethereum, those are much bigger gambles, but they also maybe have higher upside, right? They can potentially bring you greater returns, but, you know, they're not as proven. So yeah, you know, I certainly wouldn't put more than 10% of my portfolio in it. You know, but everybody's different, and, you know, if you want to YOLO it, go for it, but no promises.
Nice. Jen, Mark, what are you working with over there?
Wait till Jen finds out how much of our portfolio. No, I mean, it's
definitely. Let me not be surprised here.
Yeah, no, I on a live event.
What Aaron and John mentioned, you know, I think it has its place in a modern portfolio. I mean, I think the other aspect I would add to it is, even within, like, I think, you know, you guys spoke to altcoins, right? The non-Bitcoin and Ethereum coins. Like, there's different risk profiles even within cryptocurrencies, or across cryptocurrencies rather, right? So if you're going to say, you know, you want to allocate 5% of your overall portfolio to cryptocurrencies, then you have to go to what are you allocating of that 5%? You know, what are you allocating to Bitcoin versus Ethereum versus maybe if you want to, you know, buy a lottery ticket on Cardano or something else, right? So, I mean, I think that's, you know, that kind of goes back to the very beginning of this conversation of, you know, researching whatever investments you're getting into. And yeah, I definitely would say, you know, I'm bullish on the technology overall, cryptocurrency, blockchain, you know, smart contracts, some of the things we talked about, but it's difficult to pick a winner, right? I mean, to know which one is going to appreciate the most. I mean, I think as Aaron mentioned, right, like we're definitely off of the mania high that it was at like a month and a half ago. So is it a good time to invest now versus then? I mean, who knows, right? I mean, so I think, and there's people out there who believe that cryptos follow like technical trading, right? Like that basically that, you know, you have your support levels and your resistance levels and things like that. So, I mean, I think to me, it's like another asset that has a whole different set of like rules and things to sort of pay attention to. So, but yeah, I would keep it. I would correlate your investment with your attention span and your risk tolerance as well.
That's a good one. I like attention span.
That's
because
a good point.
It fluctuates like crazy and it changes. It's evolving. So what Bitcoin was 5 years ago is not what Bitcoin is today. So, you know, you got to continuously reevaluate if you think it, you know, it's still the asset type that you want.
Yeah. Well, we had a question pop up on the live. And I think this kind of is a good segue into what Mark had touched on earlier. But, you know, we see that Bitcoin has dropped quite a bit. And, you know, I do the dollar cost averaging whenever I buy my stocks every couple of weeks. And, you know, there's a big dip now. I mean, where do you guys recommend buying? Is this the time to buy now, especially with Bitcoin? What tips, advice do you have in regards to when to purchase and make that investment?
I think it's always the time to buy. It's, you know, I mean, again, if we're talking about the mainstream ones that have proven use cases and have proven networks, if you're talking about like crazy moon coins that, you know, are pumping, obviously, you know, I don't think there's ever a good time to get into that unless you're one of the pumpers. So I think for Bitcoin and Ethereum, you know, I think if you bought it at 60,000, you know, I think that's, if you're playing the long-term game, which I think you should with crypto, I think if you bought it at 60,000, that's fine. You know, and if you're getting it at 30,000, great. I don't think it's hard to time the market. to give you an example, so the last bull run, that was in the end of 2017. So it was pumping and pumping, and it was going crazy like it was a few months ago. And people started, and towards the end of December, it was really spiking, like November, December of 2017. It was really spiking, and people were like mortgaging their houses. People were maxing out their credit cards. People were taking out crazy loans and buying it at $20,000. And then the market crashed in January of 2018, and it continued to crash, and it got down to about $3,000 a few months later. So those people did stupid things, and they lost money. But if they invested in crypto in like a normal way with money they actually had, and they just left it there, well, their investment that dropped, went from 20 and dropped to 3, if they kept it a few years later in 2021, like we saw, it went up to 60,000. So they would have tripled their money. So you can't time the market. If you believe in it, just buy it whenever and hold on to it and watch it if you want to get some anxiety, I guess. If you don't, just let it be.
You also have to be awake 24 hours to watch it. Since it trades.
Yeah, trades. I think John's definitely right there. I mean, that's like the fundamentals of investing right there. You know, you buy it for the long term, you're holding for the long term. And yeah. And the problem with timing the market, I think I mentioned this last time I was on, is you got to get it right twice. You got to get it right when it goes down and when it goes up. So, especially with something that's constantly fluctuating, it's tough. But yeah, if you believe in it, and, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum, they've kind of proven themselves at this point. So I think it's something that you can be safe in DCAing. So.
I kind of feel like personally, you know, what, 15 years ago, I know a lot of us probably had CDs, and we put our money in the CD, and in 5, maybe 10 years, then we could get our money again. And we knew it was going to go up. Okay. Now nobody's putting their money in a CD. It's not going to beat inflation, but this is a good way of like, all right, it's probably in 5 years. In 10 years, if you put your money into it now, it's probably going to have gone up. So I kind of view it as like, as that sort of strategy, not something I'm looking to like swing trade tomorrow.
And one other thing I'll mention, just a practical thing I learned, at least through experience, was on Gemini. If you put it in a market order, basically you just buy whatever the market price is, it's a higher fee than if you put in a limit order, because it has to do with how they view liquidity. If you put in a market order, you're basically taking liquidity from the market.
Okay, explain what these terms mean.
So market order would just mean that I want to buy it, you know, I'm going to put in a buy order and I want it filled immediately. Whatever the market price, whatever somebody's selling it for, I'm going to get it filled at that price. A limit order means that you set a price target. So if it's trading for, like, you look at it now, if it's trading for $32,000, you may put in a limit order and say, okay, I'm willing to buy some amount at when it's at $30,000 per Bitcoin. So you would say, that's my limit order. If you put that in, then it's a lower fee than if you were to do a market order, because you're adding liquidity to the market. You're basically putting that, your amount of money in at that price. And so just something to be aware of, because I had to learn that through experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to kind of circle back to something that was touched on earlier. Just, I guess, this cryptocurrency being so secure. There was, I didn't catch all of it this morning, but on the news, I know they were talking about Bitcoin, and they had mentioned that the people that held up the oil lines for ransom, they sent it over to Bitcoin, but then the United States government was able to get some of that money back. And it was Bitcoin. So that was like a big issue, because they're like, how are they able to get any of this money back? And it's supposed to be like some security. And then I heard they bought the server, or they, people were just throwing all types of random things out there. I mean, is it really secure if we're seeing the government being able to get money back? I mean, like, what are your thoughts in regards to just hearing something like that? Did you catch that on the news at all this morning?
I briefly heard about that, but I haven't delved into it. Keeping up with Bitcoin and crypto is like a full-time job. So no, I don't know. I'm sure it's there's got to be more to it. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. Maybe they did something tricky to, I don't know. The answer is, I don't know. But I'd be surprised if they were somehow able to infiltrate the Bitcoin network, because again, it's decentralized. So people who vote on these transactions, can be in various places around the country, and they're, you know, like random people. So I don't know how you do that. I'd be surprised. But if that was true, that would be a huge blow to Bitcoin, because, you know, that's obviously a disadvantage. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, the price hasn't
dropped to $1, so I think it's probably not true. Because if that was true, I think Bitcoin would be fairly worthless right now. But I don't know. I don't know the details.
It's kind of like any individual obviously can be hacked, their password, that sort of thing, right? But
right.
It's also a little bit kind of a proof of legitimacy, in my opinion, on Bitcoin, because all transactions are traceable and trackable, right? So this person that hacked the pipeline and got the $4.4 million, that transaction is visible on the blockchain, and there's no erasing it. There's no making it go away. So I think that's also legitimacy of, like, this is a real currency. That's a traceable currency. So if you're worried about, like, oh, this is like this dark material stuff, like, no, it's traceable just like any other transaction.
Yeah, it is traceable. You can follow that from account to account. And if they were to watch it, they can see, you know, they can see transactions and maybe determine patterns to maybe figure out people. You know, there's probably ways, especially, you know, when we get into like quantum computing. I mean, maybe there'd be ways to track it, but then I'm sure there's going to be quantum Bitcoin to counteract that. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there's still human people involved at some point, and those people are hackable, right? You can socially engineer, you know, people and situations. So maybe that's how it happened, but I don't know the details.
Yeah, well, check it out. I'd love to get everyone's insight, you know, offline about that. Like I said, I'm fresh to this. This conversation has been great for me. I've learned so much from everyone on this panel this evening. I have one last question, and I'll stop running my mouth. But have you ever seen the show on Netflix, The Startup or Startup? Have you seen that? It's about cryptocurrency, and it's actually like real talk. Everything that you're saying is like what's going on in that show. You should check it out. You would really, really enjoy it. It's on Netflix.
So that's new. If you want to learn more about Bitcoin, watch the show.
Seriously. You'll be amazed hearing this conversation and then going to watch that show. I mean, really check it out.
No, that's funny. I actually watched the first episode last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. I rarely turn on that.
Did, right?
And it was like the first thing on there. I was like, oh, I'm going to be on a Bitcoin podcast tomorrow. I might as well watch this.
Yeah.
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 Some podcast for like resources that you felt like we've been able to learn from. What were some of the podcasts that you?
Yeah. It's for me personally. I mean, so just a couple of the podcasts that I listened to get some background were, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Tim Ferriss, but he's like a lifestyle guru. But he's had a couple of folks on his podcast over the years. And I think we can probably share that
We'll post it on the website and everything, but
yeah. But, he's had a couple, and then there's another guy, his name's Lex Friedman. So he's a computer scientist as well. And he's had a couple of, popular cryptocurrency folks or like key opinion leaders or thought leaders, as Daryl mentioned on his podcast. And it's just interesting because like one thing I find fascinating about this is like there's a financial component, there's a social component, there's a political component. Like there's so much tied into this, technology. And we're talking about it, I know, as an investment, but there's a whole universe behind it. And it's really interesting. I actually think it's going to be, you know, sort of like how the internet impacted life. I honestly think like cryptocurrency and blockchain technology could be similarly transformative. So I think it's definitely worth learning more about, even if you don't put a dollar into it right now.
So it's not too late, basically, is the thing that I'm hearing from everyone on this panel.
Absolutely not.
I don't think so.
Awesome.
Thank you guys so much for your time. If anyone's tuning in and they have more questions, where can they go within the ODs on Finance group to learn more? You mind sharing y'all social channels and how to get involved?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely jump on the Facebook group if you aren't already a member. That's where all the discussion happens. That's where all the drama happens. You can always email us, odsonfinance@gmail.com. And then we've got an Instagram as well. And John's on the Facebook group. So, John, you can always pick up questions. I mean, he wrote a fantastic article, by the way. That's why when when you all had the idea of doing this podcast, I was like, we need to get John on here because that was a lot of good information. So, but yeah, anywhere.
Thank you. Yeah, feel free to hit me up. If you want to send me like $100, I'll give you some Bitcoin, I promise.
Only with a smart contract, John. People are y'all, thanks for your time. We'll be back with a new episode probably next week because that's how we do things. And happy investing.
All right, thanks for having us again.
Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars. And make sure you follow us on all social media platforms. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.